Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome into Tech Talk. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk. It's our chance each week to catch up with the world of technology. How's it going? Is anything broken? Is it all working just fine? We're always keen to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is where you send those emails. We're always glad to hear from you. Coming up this time, we'll be hearing a very special conversation with RNIB's Ali Long, who explores some of the ways in which RNIB has changed over the last 35 years. Plus, Hubert Pavalkovich has been hearing about a new technology tool available from Guide Dogs. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich, Callum Stoneman and Jackie Brown. Good to have you with us. Hubert, what's grabbing your attention this time?
We're back onto the Meta Ray-Ban glasses as Ira are doing a giveaway of 4 Ray-Ban Meta glasses in August. As we're still in August, thankfully, there's still a bit to go, and you can earn, basically the way it works is you can earn multiple entries to the prize draw by completing various Ira tasks. So for example, if you use the Access AI recognition service, you get an entry, and you can then get an additional entry by getting the image verified by a visual interpreter. And there are many other tasks available for explorers. The winners will be announced on the 30th of August, and you can win the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, but you can also win 150 free Ira minutes too. So yes, it's quite a handy giveaway to enter if you wish.
Okay. All right. Well, let us know how you go with that. Callum?
Yeah, I'm using Access AI all the time now at the minute. Get those entries in.
There you go.
I want to give a quick mention to Sonos, because we've been talking about this update from May quite a bit, where they... I'm not going to go over the whole thing again. Long story short, they redesigned the app in May, released an update, and it was very, very bad from an accessibility point of view. And they've been improving things gradually over the last couple of months. I'm happy to say now they've finally added headings to the home screen, which makes it a hell of a lot easier to navigate. If you're a Sonos user and you've been playing with the app, you'll know what I'm talking about. But what I find interesting is they have basically spent the last couple of weeks apologising, not just to, well, in fact, I don't know if they've mentioned accessibility, but they've basically been apologising to all their users. The CEO has put out an apology to basically say this update should never have been released. There were far too many bugs, there were missing features. It sounds like, and this is kind of what I quite like, that it wasn't just us who got hit by this quite dreadful update. It didn't go down too well in the mainstream as well.
I think it can feel really catastrophic when the accessibility ball gets dropped, but you're right to point out that actually everybody struggles with software regressions, as they call them. Do you do that thing, Callum, in VoiceOver on iOS, where you can actually assign a gesture to navigate by heading so you don't always have to turn the rotor? So I've gone into my VoiceOver settings and gone to commands, and I've set my two-finger flick right to go to the next heading, which I find is a great productivity boost. I know we were talking about that last week, productivity, and moving by heading with a two-finger flick right is mine, I think.
Yeah, I've got exactly the same. Yeah, two-finger flick right goes to the next heading, two-finger flick left goes to previous. And I was trying to do something for my wife the other day, and I picked up her iPhone, turned on VoiceOver, and it actually took me a while. I was like, why is this not working? Oh yeah, because it's on the defaults.
Oh yeah, it's quite disorientating, isn't it, when you get on someone else's phone, especially if they've got a different voice and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, well I've customized mine, but yeah, Jess has got Daniel and he's talking at the default speech rate and everything. Oh, it's terrible.
Let's bring in Jackie Brown. What's on your mind, Jackie?
I'm still playing with the help tech activator. Sadly, I'm going to have to send it back to VisionAid very soon. But it's been really interesting trying it out and all the different features. Again, as we said last week, it's very expensive. It does offer some unique features compared to the others, but it is Yeah, it's a lot of money, and you would have to maybe have a good case if you were going to try and get access to work to buy it for you, or if you're in education and you want those particular features, if they're very important to you, then you would have quite a case, I think, in applying for it. But good luck to you if you do.
There we are. Right. Well, I've been playing with one of the new Sony cameras as a screen reader on board, so I'll report
Oh.
back on that in the coming weeks. All righty, Hubert,
Very
Callum,
interesting.
Jackie Brown, thank you so much, and stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Over the last few weeks, a brand new tech selector tool has been launched, hosted by Guide Dogs in partnership with many other site charities. And joining me here from Guide Dogs is Sarah Brandwood, Senior Digital Product Manager. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Let's start about the Tech Selector tool. How did it come about? What is the origin of this project?
Tech Selector came about because of a growing need. We know that there's over 2 million people in the UK who have sight loss, and we know that every 6 minutes in the UK, somebody loses their sight. Technology and its advancements is becoming more and more pivotal in enhancing independence. But we know that there's a need out there because people coming to us saying that they still struggle to identify the right technology for them. And that's not just the people with sight loss, that's people who help them. So, friends, family, professionals working in that sector. Not everyone's sure what tech's right and how to use that tech, especially because it's such a moving entity. Things are progressing at a rapid speed. So we've been working together with the entire sight loss charity sector, and we did a survey with Guide Dogs, and well, we are Guide Dogs, but we did a survey with RNIB and Thomas Pocklington Trust, and it showed us that 60% of people with a vision impairment felt that it was either quite or very important for there to be changes and improvements to training of how they can use technology to its full potential. And that's not just kind of bespoke vision impairment technology, and that's also more mainstream technology that people didn't know what was out there and how best to use it. And with the advent of new technology and apps, this figure rose to 70%, so a lot of people really needed our help. We found that there was no kind of one solution across the UK to help people understand what's out there for them. It seemed a little bit of a postcode lottery. If you're in some places, you could go to certain small sight loss charities and there would be lots of help on tech, and other places it was a bit more barren in that area. So we wanted to do something. So we started working, as I said, as a sector, and Tavit, who are one of our partners, which is the Technology Association of Visually Impaired People, came up with a very basic concept idea of which they called the product selector tool. And what we did, we worked as a sector and we kind of led on it to create what is now Tech Selector. So it's a one-stop shop, ideally not a shop, but one-stop place that people can go, that's online, and they can see exactly what technology or apps or software or hardware is out there and what's right for them. We've tried to make it as personalized as possible. So that's why it came about, really. There was a need that we saw as a sector and we decided to work together.
Now that the Tech Selector tool has launched, how does it exactly work?
People can access Tech Selector by visiting guidedogs.org.uk/tech-selector. So it's hosted on our webpage, and it's hopefully a very easy to use webpage, a digital journey that people can just go onto it, and they can use a series of filters to help see what technology is out there. So when we've done a lot of insight and research, and we did this with again a lot with Thomas Pocklington Trust, we realized that people, they weren't always fixated on, I want a specific, I don't know, braille machine or a specific smartphone. They wanted a solution to their problem. So we've tried to make it as personal as possible by categorizing products. So if you're interested in getting out and about or being more independent or home or doing things for hobbies and leisure, you can just click on one of those links and that will take you through to see what products are available in those categories. But we also wanted to be able to filter it so people can get it as personalized as possible. So it's just a really hopefully easy to use series of product filters, and we've tried to make it look like some of the websites that you might be familiar using. So some of the big e-commerce websites out there. Just to bear in mind, we're not selling anything on ours. You can't buy the products on ours. This is just information that people can access. But we've tried to make it familiar to use for people. Or you can drill down even further. You could filter by sight loss, whether you've got high, low vision or no vision. You could filter by your confidence with technology, whether you're beginner, intermediate, or advanced. We've tried to be able to filter it by price range as well. So we know that when we did some usability testing, we found that was important to our users. And also by a technology type, if you know a bit more specifically what you're looking for. And then that will show that the products that are available, and those are our product pages. So you can click on a product page, whether it's for a smartphone or for a smart cane or one of any of the products on there, and then it will give you a list of information. That information has been designed to be as easy to digest as possible. So it will give you the highlights of the product. It will give you the pros and cons of that product, because we're trying to be as open and honest. And also we've tried to give user testimonials where possible. So people with sight loss who've used it, they can give you a little snapshot of how it's helped in their life. And then we've got a price bracket of how much roughly that product will cost for you, how easy it is to set up and start using, and the sort of amount of time that it might take you to set up and start using it. If there's information out there on one of our partners' websites, so maybe it's RNIB's website or Tavip's, or it will send you to those pages so you can read more about this particular product. If there's some like a third-party website that we think is particularly useful, we've linked to that. There's some great videos on there from one of our partners called Henshaw. So there's some, for some products, there's some little videos you can watch. And also there's then links to, if you want to find out more, you can speak to our friends at RNIB.
Now, you said you can't sell products as a charity, but as part of the tech selector tool, are people pointed in the direction of where they can buy the product, or at least given some information as to how they can purchase or where they can purchase specific products? How does that work?
Yeah, we link to the manufacturer's webpage, so people can go on there and find out more information about the product from the manufacturer itself. Obviously, some of those manufacturers, the majority, will sell the products, but we're trying to be as impartial as possible and not link to a specific vendor.
You've mentioned testimonials. What sort of feedback initially have you received from users who have used the Tech Selector?
Tech Selector itself, we are doing a lot of analysis to see how it's helping people. So it's only been launched mid-June, so it's early days, but we can see that it's generating a lot of usage. We can also see what products people are interested in particularly. And that's quite a nice spread, actually. It's quite a nice spread between more specific technology for people with vision impairment and also the smart technology. We've had a lot of positive feedback from our partners, not just service users, but our partners and professionals. We've done a lot of testing prior to release. So we've done a lot of usability testing with all those people, representatives of all those different audiences. The feedback was it was very easy to use. People felt that they could navigate it. They found the information, it was quite bite-sized, so easy to digest, but they liked the fact that we're open and honest. There's pros and cons. We weren't just trying to sell them the product.
Now, you've talked about feedback and things you can improve in the future. I appreciate this has just been released, so don't know how much information you could give us on this particular one, but you know, what are some of the future plans for the future of Tech Select and how it will develop?
Yeah, we've got quite a lot of big, exciting plans, actually. We have committed as a sector to add an additional 100 products to the Tech Selector over the forthcoming years. And we're going to basically monitor what people are looking at and seeing if we can get ideas on which products people are interested in, so we can bring in more similar or complementary products. We're also speaking to we have an expert panel. And that's made up of people across the sector, mostly who have sight loss or vision impairment themselves. And they are also suggesting products that they use in their life that might be really useful to add to the text selector. So we're committing to adding these products and making it more robust. We're also looking at the user interface. So as I said, it's meant to be a nice, easy user interface. It was this idea from Tavip that, it had filters that people could use, and which we've done and we've implemented. However, we're looking at the different learning styles. So some people might also be, I really don't know anything about technology. I'm a little bit scared to even go here. So what we're trying to do is look at maybe a quiz style. I mean, I use that word loosely, but a series of questions that people can answer, very user-friendly, that would get extract information from them in a really user-friendly way, and then it could provide the products available. So a very bespoke series of questions for them.
Well, it is excellent that the text selector tool is finally out after a good few years of hearing about it. So to remind our listeners once again, if they wish to use the text selector tool, where can they go to do that? Can you remind us again of the web address?
You could use guidedogs.org.uk/tech-selector, and that'll get you straight to the main page of the text selector, where you can start to begin your tech journey. And from there, you can read our FAQ pages. If you've got any questions, you can see from there it'll link you to other places. Or if you're maybe new to your sight loss journey, it can there's a few questions in there about how you can get help and so on and so forth. So yeah, please do visit it. It from anyone from any of those three audiences, whether you've got sight loss yourself, whether you're a professional working with people with sight loss, or a friend or family member. I really hope it'd be useful to you, and like, as I said, any feedback would be greatly appreciated.
To finish off, is there a contact that people can use to give you feedback on the text selector? If so, what is it?
So if anybody wants to get in touch, you can reach out to me personally. My email address is Sarah with a H dot Brandwood, which is BRANDWOOD at guidedogs.org.uk. Alternatively, if you are navigating our web pages, right down at the bottom of the text selector page or any of our web pages, there's a blue banner that says keep in touch. It's for inquiries, so you can always just click on the contact us link and contact us in that way. You can always just put some feedback for text selector, and it will find its way. Alternatively, we've got a large social media presence, and on there, on our Facebook pages, our LinkedIn, and even our TikTok, you can like or friend us, and you'll see some hopefully useful information. We call them tech hacks. They're just nice bite-sized information about how to best use different pieces of technology. And if you want to contact us through social media and the usual channels, feel free. And again, that'd get back to me. So hopefully lots of different ways.
That is fantastic. Well, Sarah Brandwood, Senior Digital Product Manager at GuideDogs, thank you very much for coming on to tell us about the new text selector tool here on Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio. Using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
35 years is a long time. Cast your mind back to 1989. The tape recorder was still very much king for many of us. Our computers were powered by MS-DOS. The Braylon Speak was the Braille note taker of the day. And devices like the Opticon and the Kurzweil reading machine were never too far away, if you could afford them, of course. And in 1989, RNIB had just moved to a new purpose-built facility in Peterborough. And somebody who started working with us here at RNIB in 1989 was Ali Long. Welcome in, Ali. Good to have you with us. You are leaving RNIB after 35 years, but can you remember your first day?
Let's say like yesterday. So I'd never come across a blind or partially sighted person, no surprise there, I think, that's quite normal. I came to RNIB and I remember the first thing was seeing a poster on the wall that said, "Don't pet the guide dogs." And the first thing that happened was Ron on reception, guide dog Gareth, came and put his paws on my shoulder. And I was standing there with them like, "Oh, what do I do?" You know, really wanted to give him a fuss, but, you know, the poster said, and having no idea kind of, you know, what to do, you know, how to guide, what, you know, being uncomfortable about, you know, the language that I was using, you know, "See you later," those kind of things. You know, but everybody was pretty much new. There wasn't many people that had moved from Brough House, the London site that had closed. So we were kind of all learning together, I think.
And what were you doing? What were you kind of hired to do?
So I came in as an administrator in the, you know, what we call the retail team now, the products team, really kind of supporting the assistant director. On, you know, bringing products into that service. And actually, you know, the thing I really remember about that time was, you know, I'd come from a commercial kind of sales environment, but at RNIB you bought the products in, the talking watches and things, we actually sold them for a third of the price that we bought them in at. So heavily subsidised service.
Goodness, how times have changed. So we'll come on to some of that. I'd like to do a little bit of a whistle-stop kind of tour, really, of some of your highlights and projects that you've been involved with over the years. And I should also mention for listeners, another voice you might hear in this conversation is that of RNIB's inclusive design lead, Robin Spinks, who joins us now. And of course, Ali, you have been our director of consumer and business services most recently, but quite early in your RNIB journey, you were involved in children's services. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, I came in as administrator and did quite a lot, you know, supporting the retail team for a couple of years. And then my niece actually lost her sight at the age of six, and the Perkins Brailler arrived, and, you know, things changed. And, you know, at that point I kind of realised that RNIB wasn't doing that much for children and for, you know, supporting education. And my boss at the time, the wonderful John Godber, said, you know, go and do something about it. And he gave me, you know, a lot of, you know, free rein to find out what was needed and, you know, to help plug the gap. So I spent a lot of time developing the children's publishing for the library and for, you know, for schools, so curriculum materials and products.
Let's talk about products, because they've been the kind of the mainstay for me. I remember growing up hearing at the end of all the talking books, you know, you were told about the Institute's catalogue of aids and games available on request, and that was when we were at Great Portland Street in London. So you became involved with products and magazines as well?
Yes, yeah, later on magazines, yeah. So the children's magazines came kind of in my area. So, you know, it was a great time where, you know, it's very customer focused, and it was about, you know, we kind of each had a kind of, you know, a customer that we kind of majored on in the team. So mine was kind of children and education, you know, other people kind of, you know, mobility, you know, technology was kind of, you know, emerging, you know, for RNIB and our role in supporting assistive technology. But you know, my first product introduction was you know, something that customers were asking for, which was teachers, which was coloured braille paper. You know, really simple, but at the time, you know, back then, you know, you had the brown manila paper. Nobody wanted to put, you know, the blind child's work on the wall. So, you know, that's kind of where it started. But of course, you know, you know, why not? You know, and it was appealing for all the kids in the classroom. and moved on. You know, I had the privilege of being able to develop things like the tactile globe and, you know, other products over there.
You mentioned coloured braille paper, coloured canes as well.
Yes, yes. I mean, big debate, you know, big debate over that one. And, you know, but I listened to customers, I listened to the professionals. And, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, kind of mixed view. But, you know, if you want to get, you know, a cane in the hand of a young child, you know, you've got to make it appealing. And it really did, you know, change things. You know, lots more children using canes in their, you know, early years.
Reading and access to books has been a bit of a theme, I think, throughout your tenure, and of course you will have been around when the talking book library digitized.
Yeah, when it was 8-track, you know, supported by a massive, you know, amount of you know, volunteers out in the field who were engineers going out and fixing them, and then digitizing the collection and moving to CD and the DAISY format, which, you know, we still have today, but, you know, moving on further to, you know, USB. But now, you know, I'm really proud of delivering the Alexa skill, you know, loved by lots of customers for the immediacy of being able to, you know, just get your book, and, you know, you don't need lots of you know, lots of techie skills, you know, and also the, you know, the newer download service.
Yeah, I think you and I actually talked about direct to device delivery probably in my interview. Let's talk about PenFriend, because this was a bit of a project of yours. Explain for everyone who's not familiar with how the PenFriend audio labeler came about. Yeah.
So, I mean, this one definitely has a special place for me, and it's that, you know, kind of happen chance, you know, meeting of somebody. You know, guy turned up, we were doing an event in Great Portland Street, a guy turned up and asked to meet, and he had a talking pen that he was using on children's books, and children's publisher, Rabin, and, you know, is still a great, you know, partner and supporter. And you know, he kind of said, well, can you, your talking book collection, kind of, can we embed that content onto books so that people can use the pen to navigate, you know, through a book? And at the time, we had just digitised the collection. I thought, God, if I go back to the ranch and say, okay, guys, now we've done that, we're going to do it all over again for something different, it would not have gone well. But we were talking at the time about labelling and, you know, the kind of affordability and different ways to label, and the demise of the kind of standard audio cassette was kind of a little bit old school. And so I kind of just said to him, well, you know, is there any chance you can record onto a label? And that became the PenFriend. He said, yeah, I can do that. And yeah, the PenFriend was born after a little bit of development work.
Goodness me. And what an impact it's had.
Yeah, it has. You know, there's been some fantastic customer feedback over the years, and just so many ways to use it. It's not just, you know, not just a kind of audio labeler. I think it's so much more than that. But actually, the biggest challenge, which took, I think, about 2 years, we were at it, was washable labels for the PenFriend. You don't know how many samples and different adhesives we trawled the world for that one. We really did, you know, and had to get quite inventive about, you know, yacht adhesive and things. So, you know, some things, you know, seem very simple, but, you know, they can be quite a challenge to achieve, as we discovered.
Yeah, product development can be really tough, actually, and you know, sometimes as a customer, it's hard to really know all the steps that went into bringing something to market.
Dave Williams speaking to RNIB's Ali Long there, and we'll hear more from that conversation a little bit later.
Time once again to talk game-based task managers. These apps are a productivity tool to help you manage your productivity, such as to-dos and daily tasks you want to accomplish, but adds a bit of a gaming element to it to keep you a bit more motivated, especially if you are a gamer. Last week we tested Habitica, one of these task managers, which had a lot of fantasy gaming elements to it. Today we will look at a different one called Dominate Life,
which provides you the various task managing elements. And there is a bit of a game element also, but it is a little bit different, with some levels of customization, I would say. And the reason I'm mentioning customization particularly is because of the app we are about to look at next. So in Habitica, the level of customization was fairly minimal, but still there. So you could customize dailies and to-dos to the point where you can set a due date. Or with the daily, you can say it, how often it repeats. You can set the difficulty level, add some notes if you wanted, and add checklist items, for example, if the task involved a few different items. And if you add checklist items, you could actually increase the experience level you gain for completing the task. And you can you can certainly increase the amount of a reward that a task generates. But you can't really choose exactly what reward and how much of it you get for the task, which will become important in what we're about to demonstrate. So let's look at the other app that does something similar, an app called Dominate Life. Now, this app doesn't have to-dos, dailies, and habits. This app has quests, and that's all you have. The big thing with this app is customization. So what I'm about to show you is to what extent you can actually customize your quests. And I think what I will say is the big difference here, the level of customization between Dominate Life, which we're going to have a look at, and Habitica is like chalk and cheese. You can customize the most minuscule of things, which adds more fun to it, but also makes it a bit more lengthy. Also, what I will say is that you will see less fantasy gaming elements here than you have in Habitica. If anything, I dare say there's actually no fantasy gaming elements. There's no pets, no mounds, no pieces of equipment. It's more based on creating quests and completing them. There is a reward system, but you can be in charge of that even more so.
Dominate Life. Dominate Life.
I'll give you a quick walk through the app, but the main thing I want to show you is actually creating a sample quest and show you just what you can customize here. So I'll show you the tabs first.
Home screen.
So you've got the home screen where you can look at your quests. Not all of them will be shown unless you click see all, because it will show you the quests that need to be completed, which are in progress or which have a deadline.
Progress screen.
Progress screen will look at your progress with levels and achievements and such like that.
Achievement screen.
That's your achievement screen. You can look at various achievements it sets you with your skills. Then there's an unlabeled tab screen, which is the store tab, but it's unlabeled, so keep this in mind that if VoiceOver goes silent, that is what it is.
Level up screen.
Then there's the level up screen, where you can look at how long you spent on each level, what quests you've completed, skills and attributes you've improved, that sort of thing. We'll stick on the home screen, though.
A red up arrow. Image. Hubert.
So it's me.
Sound Scout.
So I'm Sound Scout, which I've called level 3.
3% experience.
3% experience.
Settings page, button. In progress tab, button. Top attributes tab, button.
So top attributes.
Top skills tab,
skills.
Button. Zero active filters.
I'm not going to go into skills and attributes now, because we're going to do it when we create a sample quest.
See all, button.
So I will double tap see all to see all quests, because that will allow us to create a new quest.
All quests.
The best way to find the Create New button, you can swipe through all your quests, or you can just touch in the bottom left-hand corner.
Home screen.
Where you see home screen, and swipe once to the left.
All quests, Create New.
This is what you need.
Choose pre-created quest button.
So you can look at sample quests the app gives you, which are pretty decent depending what you want to focus on. I personally prefer to create my own just because of how I like to play these games.
Create quest from scratch button.
So I swipe to the right, double tap on this.
New quest.
So new quest. So the quest we're going to do is to create this two-part series. That's going to be our sample quest.
Navigate back. Title. Required. Enter a quest title. Text field. Insertion pointer.
So I'm going to enter the title of this. So I've typed in game-based task managers.
New. Navigate back. But type. Required. Text field. 5 characters. Description.
So a description, I can just put something like Tech Talk series.
Enter a description. Text field. Objectives.
So here we go, objectives. So in objectives, you set the different tasks you want to do as part of this quest. So in this case, for example, it would be record two demos. So record Habitica and Dominate Life, then edit both of them, and then get them ready for the show. So that's the kind of objectives I'm going to create here. So there we go. I have created quest objectives. Record both demos, edit them, and send the piece over ready for the show. Let's see what else.
400 objective.
Let's see what else we've got on the screen.
Record, delete object, record, delete, edit, delete, delete, create an outcomes. Add outcomes for when the quest is either failed or completed.
So this is outcomes. We're going to create an outcome so I can show you what you can change here.
Create a new quest outcome.
Here we go.
Attributes button.
So you've got attributes,
skills,
and button. You've got skills. And here is where you select what skills and attribute this quest will improve. Again, you set these yourself, so you can choose the skills you want to improve. That's how customizable this is. So you will see what I've got here. So let's look at attributes first.
Attributes. Attributes. Create independent travel. Level 2. Switch button. Off.
So that's one attribute.
Fitness. Level 1. Switch button.
Fitness.
Off. Radio. Level 1. Switch button. Off.
Radio. So this is radio-based work, so I'm going to double tap on that.
On. Skills. Button.
So now I'm going to tap on skills and change some skills that this quest will improve.
Skills. Create a new skill.
So you can create a new skill. I'm not going to because I've got loads created.
Live broadcasting. Level 4. Switch button. Off.
So it's not going to be that.
Studio recording. Level 3. Switch button. Off.
We will go for that.
On. Content planning. Level 3. Switch button. Off. Audio editing. Level 3. Switch button. Off. On.
Yes, we're going to go for that.
Interviewing. Level 3. Switch button. Content research. Walking. Level 2. Traveling. Level 2. Reading. Level 1. Music show planning. Level. Trivia research. Recording demos. Level 1. Switch button. On. Demonstrating technology. Level 1. Switch button. On. Travel planning. Banking. Dog care. Social media. Save button. 408 new quest.
So that is saved. We have created what skills and attributes this will do. Now this is where you can again go to more customization, because you can actually select how much each skill and attribute will be affected when you complete this task or in fact fail it.
Radio. Level 1. Selected. Barely affected. Mildly affected. Button.
I'm going to change it.
Selected. Moderately. Heavily affected. Skills. Studio recording. Level 3. Selected. Barely mildly affected. Selected. Moderate. Heavily audio editing.
These used to be percentage sliders, but now they've changed it to these sorts of radio buttons.
Level 3. Selected. Barely affected. Mildly affected. Select. Moderate. Heavily. Recording. Level 1. Recording demos. Level 1. Selected. Mildly affected. Button. Moderately affected. Button. Mild. Moderately affected. Selected. Mildly affected. Button. Select. Moderate. Demonstrating tech. Level 1. Select. Mildly affected. Select. Moderate. Heavily. I can fail this quest. This will add or remove the fail quest. Switch button. On.
So I tend to keep that on, but this quest will have to be done. So regardless of it, it will have to be completed. So technically, I can probably remove that button.
Off. Create a new quest outcome. Custom outcomes / penalties. Add custom outcomes and penalties for finishing this quest by pressing the button below. Create a new quest custom outcome.
So this is where you can actually enter whatever outcome you want. I don't really use that because, well, you can possibly set like a little treat you get for completing this. I'm not sure really. I don't tend to use it, but you can customize that if you wish.
Activity tracking. Add activities to this quest. You can create a new quest. Add activities to this quest. You can then track the time spent on each activity.
Again, this is very customizable. I don't tend to use this activities feature much. But because it doesn't really bring anything to the actual reward of the quest, but you can do so if you wish. I choose not to, but you can customize it to that extent.
Create a new quest activity. Random rewards. Add a random reward to this quest. Create new random reward.
Again, random reward, you can choose a treat maybe that you can customize the treat you get for this. So you can say, I don't know, you can have a takeaway, you can have a bag of crisps, whatever you choose to do.
Store reward.
Store reward. Now, this is where it's important. So you can choose a certain amount of store credits that this task will give you. And then if you have added custom items you can buy in the store, you can then buy these items. So like with Habitica, you can maybe, I don't know, put a bag of crisps or a sweet treat or a takeaway or something like that into the store. And you can decide how many credits it will cost. And then you can assign amounts of credits to the tasks you do. That is how customizable it is. Now, this part is actually not accessible, so I'm going to swipe through the store reward options so you can see what happens. Swipe, swipe, swipe. As you can hear, nothing is happening. So this part is actually not accessible. What you need to actually do is turn on screen recognition in order for this to work. And you can see various preset reward options, basically remembered by
words, characters,
your history.
Edit, describe images, screen recognition, off, on.
So I'm going to turn that on.
15, button.
And there's various presets here.
25, button.
So I'm going to choose 25, double tap on that.
25.
I can get 25 store credits for completing this.
Vertical navigation, screen recognition, on, off.
Now I'm going to turn it off because it will hide the button that I need to find, which is a bit annoying, so I need to turn screen recognition off to find that button.
We'll lose create. We'll lose currency when failed. If you enable this option and you fail this quest, you will lose the same amount of currency as you would win if you were to finish it. Switch button, off.
That's currently turned off. I'm going to turn it on because I quite like that.
On.
It'll give you enough encouragement to finish it.
Create a new quest reward preset. Difficulty. Selected. Easy. Button.
So this is a difficulty level. You can change it to hard or easy. I'm going to choose...
Medium. Button.
Medium.
Selected. Hard. Very hard. Tags.
You can tag to organize quests. Again, I don't tend to do that, but you can do so.
Add tags to bet. Create new tag. Set a deadline. Quest will automatically fail if not completed by deadline. Switch button. Off.
So you can set a deadline for this quest if you choose to. I will leave it as it is because I don't want to set one, but you definitely can do so.
We'll recreate quest when finished. This quest will be a recurrent quest, which can be completed or failed multiple times. Switch button, off.
Again, I'm not going to turn that on because it's a once complete quest, but I do have quests that are basically recurring every day.
Is in progress. Only in progress quests appear in the home screen and can be completed and failed. Switch button, off.
I'm going to press in progress for that.
On. On what weekdays are you working on it?
So weekdays you're working on it, so you can choose the weekdays for it to appear on the home screen.
The quest will appear as in progress only on the selected days. Days selected, toggle weekday, toggle weekday Monday, selected button, toggle weekday Thursday, toggle weekdays, notification reminders. By setting reminders, you will get scheduled notifications regarding this quest. You can add a maximum of 7 reminders per quest, where each separate weekday counts as one reminder. Switch button, off.
So I'm not going to add reminders, but you can do so. I've selected that I'm only working on this quest Thursday and Friday this week, so it appears on the home screen and I have to complete it.
Create button.
Create.
Quest. Create. Weekly recording. Quest.
And it's created. So you have seen the levels of customization here, and you have seen there's not much fantasy gaming going on. It's very much real life based. You are in charge of every single element of the game as to what it is and how it works. It is a very customizable system. There's no pets, no armor, swords and equipment here. It is all in charge of what you do and how you create it. So I think the big difference here is the customization level and the kind of background. So if you like your fantasy gaming and you don't want to really go through minuscule customization processes, I'd say Habitica is more your friend. But if you want a game which has less fantasy but more real life based stuff, and you want to customize everything to make your kind of daily life a bit more fun by completing tasks and earning rewards and dealing with consequences if you don't complete the quests, I think Dominate Life is more your thing. If you have any more questions on either of the two apps I've showed you, please do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
This is Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
We've had an email come flooding in from Norma, who writes, "It's great to hear demonstrations of apps that interpret and analyze photographs, etc. Would it be possible to have a demonstration and comparison between describing images online and embedded in documents, please? I have JAWS and I'm aware that there is the smart picture command, but I'm not quite sure how to use it. Is there anything similar using VoiceOver on my iPhone mini?" Callum, Any thoughts about this one?
I don't know if there's an equivalent for VoiceOver. VoiceOver does have built-in image descriptions, which you can turn on. I think it's in Settings, Accessibility, VoiceOver, and then VoiceOver Recognition. You can turn on image descriptions, but compared to what you'd get with something like the new PictureSmart and these AI features, you know, the Be My AI service from Be My Eyes or the Access AI from Aira, the ones that you get built into VoiceOver are pretty basic. They're not the best, especially nowadays. So for the iPhone, I would recommend one of those two apps, either Be My Eyes or Aira. For the JAWS PictureSmart, now this works the same way, whether you're on a web page or you're in a document. So it is a bit of a complicated set of commands. So it's JAWS key and space together, then the letter P for PictureSmart, and then there's a bunch of different commands. If you press the question mark key, and I'm only giving you this tip because I can't remember all the commands, but if you press the question mark after doing JAWS key space and then P, it will give you a little list of all the different shortcuts that you can use in that PictureSmart layer. The only catch with this, and you might already be aware of it, but you have to be on the latest version of JAWS. You have to be on JAWS 2024 for the good PictureSmart to work. If you've got 2023 or earlier, you will still have PictureSmart, but it's the older PictureSmart, which, I mean, views my own and all that, but if I'm honest, it's not very good.
And apologies to you, Norma, it was your iPad mini, not your iPhone mini. So is the recommendations there, Callum, you're saying Be My AI or the Access AI from Aira, they're going to work on the iPad mini as well?
As far as I'm aware, yeah, they should work on the iPad as well.
And of course, the benefit of the Aira one is that you can get a person to verify if the AI description is accurate.
Yes. Yeah, I love that feature. Mm. Yeah, I use that quite often, especially with the minute I'm sending a lot of photos to family of my new baby. It's nice to know, get a human verification and say that, yes, you know, he is in shot.
Norma wants to get descriptions of images of exercises. So you want to get that right.
Yes. And that's why I would say definitely use the AI features if you can, because at least then you can ask questions and you can follow up with, you know, if it's not quite describing something properly or not quite describing it in a way that you understand, you can dig into that. Whereas the built-in VoiceOver image descriptions, I mean, they're okay, but you get what you get and that's that, really.
And if you had to choose, so Norma's final question is, would Norma be better off trying to recognise images on the phone or on the laptop?
I think it depends what you're used to, I suppose. I mean, I use the phone most of the time, to be honest. But that's just because I'm on the phone most of the time anyway, and it's what I'm more comfortable with. So they both use a similar service. They both use ChatGPT to get the descriptions. I think JAWS, am I right in thinking it uses Gemini as well? But you'll get pretty similar results, whatever device you use. So just whichever one you're more comfortable with, I suppose.
Okay. Well, thank you for your email, Norma. Let us know how you get on.
We return now to Dave's conversation with Ali Long.
Let's talk about change at RNIB. Obviously, RNIB has changed quite a lot over the years. I just want to get a sense of what RNIB was like in those early days. Somebody mentioned something called transcription buses going around the place. Yeah. What's a transcription bus when it's at home?
Yeah. So we called them mobile units. So at one time we had two vans with big trailers on them that had, you know, all the recording equipment and embossing equipment, and they would travel up and down the country to different events. You know, they'd do the party conferences, obviously very topical at the moment. So, you know, there was no excuse for not having, you know, accessible formats, you know, right, you know, they could be produced on the spot. And, you know, they also kind of had, you know, some of our, you know, other products in there for people to use during the events. But, you know, very different time. So I started when Ian Bruce, Professor Bruce, was our Director General and was for, you know, 20 odd years. You know, he brought a particular focus on customer and, you know, and marketing. And you know, and also inside. So, you know, not that we don't do those things today, but, you know, they were definitely, you know, kind of relatively new to RNIB.
Mm-hmm. And it's something of a legend, isn't it? I mean, you know, not everybody here now will recognise the name of Ian Bruce, but he was here for a very long time, wasn't he?
Yeah, total legend. And, you know, we still see him. Yeah, actually, yeah. I bumped into him last week in the London office, which was lovely. And, yeah, he definitely left a lasting legacy in his tenure.
We haven't always offered professional services like transcription to some of the biggest mainstream companies. How did that come about?
So, I mean, it came about, I mean, actually before my time, I think in the early 80s, there was a guy who was doing it at a university in, I think it was Brunel University, in a porter cabin from what I hear. And, you know, that kind of merged into RNIB and, you know, has just kind of grown from there, from a, you know, a little, you know, entity into, you know, quite a significant, you know, operation these days.
I think you've been a bit modest there, Ali. I think you've helped steer some of that growth over those decades.
Yeah, I mean, I have, you know, I've had a couple of dips into kind of, I suppose, what you call business development. I mean, first, actually, I was in the first business development team back in the 90s when we started to offer commercial services. And, you know, actually back then, you know, one of our first clients was Boots with the Christmas Guide, and it's great. That's still, you know, that's still going 20 odd years later. But, you know, that has, you know, it has gone from strength to strength over the years, and particularly that contracting with, you know, the kind of major banks and utilities that really has changed.
Something that I've always found you to be particularly strong on is ensuring representation of blind people. What have you learned from being around blind and partially sighted people?
Well, I mean, over the 35 years, I think there's probably only been 3 or 4 of those years that I haven't actually had a boss who is blind. You know, so, you know, I think that, you know, I mean, it does absolutely help. But I think when you're around, you know, blind and partially sighted people, whether they're kind of more senior peers or, you know, or your staff, you know, they're empowered to, you know, kind of speak up and keep you honest.
You mentioned your niece earlier. Mm. I mean, how has your work impacted you personally? You know, when you're on holiday or with your family, has it informed the way you are?
I guess so. I mean,
are you looking at things through an accessibility lens more often than perhaps you would have had you chosen a different career? Do you think it makes you evaluate people and situations differently?
You see things that other people would never, you know, never spot or see, you know, whether it's an Ambitech cane or a, you know, a Navilens code these days, or you know, and just kind of, you know, I suppose that, you know, offering support, you know, might, you know, somebody might not take it, but you've offered it. You've not been that person that's kind of stood by watching.
What would you say to somebody starting at RNIB now, a new starter this week or a new volunteer, any pearls of wisdom?
So I always say, go to the helpline, listen to what our customers are saying. You know, I think that's really important, because that's, you know, that's the kind of reality, and you know, it can be, you know, anything that comes through, you know, on the next call from, you know, somebody with a family member who's, you know, who's losing their sight, to, you know, talking book query, to, you know, employment advice. Really, you know, the full spectrum.
I'm hesitating to ask you about legacy, because you're not leaving the planet.
I'm not. I'm definitely not leaving the planet. I am leaving the country for a little while. I'm going to plan in a holiday.
Good for you.
But when I come back, you know, I am, you know, I will be around in the sector. I, you know, I suppose I, you know, find it hard to imagine doing anything else. But definitely not retiring. And yeah, I will definitely be sticking around. Yeah, so we'll get to catch up, I'm sure, on the next phase at some point.
Excellent. Well, I shall look forward to that. And there are too many things to thank you for, but I think most of all, I want to thank you for being an ally for blind and partially sighted people, particularly those of us who work here at RNIB.
That's it. That's all we've got time for on Tech Talk this week. Thank you, as ever, for your company. If you'd like to get in contact, if you've got a question or a comment about anything you've heard on Tech Talk, we'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavarkovich and Jackie Brown, until next time, bye for now.
Bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.